following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast Studio in Schenectady, New York. It's the 450th edition of the podcast. We're on our countdown to 500 Parting Shots Podcasts. That's unbelievable. We'll probably get there maybe by year's end. We'll see what happens. Of course, you know, once we get in the college hockey season, I'll have a couple podcasts a week, so maybe we can get this done by December. We have another great show for you. I'll talk with Rennie LaRue. The New York State Basketball Hall of Fame induction ceremony is taking place Sunday in Troy. We'll talk about that, and as well as the Hockey Hall of Fame and the Baseball Hall of Fame induction ceremonies that will be coming up later this year. The NCAA Frozen Four drops the puck on Thursday with the semifinals, Denver and Western Michigan in one, and Boston University and Penn State in the other. And Dave Starman, our friend who will be analyzing the games on Westwood One, will join us as preview the matchups, and we have a lot of exciting matchups to talk about. So please stay tuned, and I'll have my interview with Rennie LaRue that took place on Tuesday. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
Timeout.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by NISFA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity. From the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Union College Athletic Director Jim McLaughlin. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and it's time for the New York State Basketball Hall of Fame on Sunday, and our guest who runs that, of course, along with the Hockey and Baseball Hall of Fames, is Rennie LaRue, and Rennie's here, nice enough to join us here for a few minutes to talk about the Sunday ceremony. Rennie, how you doing?
Great, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. I appreciate you coming on for a few minutes. Let's talk about the Basketball Hall of Fame. Who's getting inducted?
Well, we love the class. There's a decided Schenectady favor. Two members of the state championship team that played with James Thomas and Willie Dean, Mr. Hoffman and Mr. O'Connor. Pat O'Connor and Justin Hoffman, both were great players at Schenectady. Justin went to NYU and scored 1,400 points. Pat O'Connor went to Utica and scored 1,200 points. So they were both great college players. Also, Jay Olson, who's the assistant at Niskayuna now, had a great career at St. Rose and also was a star at Schenectady High. AP sports writer that you probably have met, Tim Reynolds.
Who?
Tim Reynolds. There you go. Was a local news reporter,
yep.
Worked for the Times Union for a while. He's been the beat writer for the Miami Heat for many years.
Yeah, covers very the NBA. Close. Does a great job covering the NBA for the AP as well.
He really does, and he's very close with Pat Riley. Talks to him quite often. Also, we are going to have a tribute to the really legendary player Barry Kramer, former New York State Supreme Court judge,
mm-hmm.
who played in the NBA for the New York Knicks. And Barry, as you know, left us in January. But, Ken, he was the reason I started this Hall of Fame 16 years ago. And our biggest award is the Barry Kramer Lifetime Achievement Award. So Mike Dean, the former Siena coach, who actually played against Barry in some summer leagues, is coming up to give a special speech about Barry and to induct Matt Brady, who played at Siena and then was a coach at James Madison and Marist. So very happy. Also, Andre Duncan from UAlbany was one of the first players who helped transition UAlbany from a D3 school to a D1 program. And he was their first big megastar.
Yep.
Bob Belber, the general manager of the MVP Center, has been there since its inception, since Mike Dean filled that building. And we're inducting Bob as well for his wonderful work with all the NCAA tournaments, men and women, that have been there.
Sounds like a great class. It should be a lot of fun on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. They're all really nice people. They've all made their mark, you know, in other ways off the court. I'm very pleased with the high integrity of this class.
Now, you mentioned about Barry Kramer, and that was the influence to start this. How much has he missed?
Oh, my God. He, you know, I've had hundreds of conversations with Bob Pisano, who's told me so many stories about what a great player he was, but how many lives he touched, how many people he helped get into NYU, how many, you know, he would always go over to Siena and UAlbany and lecture with the teams and help, you know, coach. He was just a really amazing human being. You know, how many players can walk away from an NBA career to go to law school and be a Supreme Court judge? That's amazing.
Yeah. Of course, money back then was not the money they're making today. So I can understand why Barry decided to leave the NBA. Obviously, a great career on the court. Fortunately, I never had to go in his courtroom for anything. But it should be. It sounds like, you know, with Mike Dean giving a tribute speech, that should be a lot of good memories for him and good memories for everybody who will be attending Sunday's banquet.
You know, I'm really looking forward to it. Barry used to come many, many times, and he would speak and he would present the award named after him. And he was so happy, and he just loved it so much. And every time he came, it was just something he really enjoyed.
Tickets still available for Sunday?
They are. We still have a few left. Not many. I think we have 8 tickets left.
And where can they purchase that?
They can call me at 518-877-5170, or they could email me on jarylaa@AOL.com.
That's great. Now let's go on to the hockey, which will take place in July, and a lot of great people coming into that. The two of the names that really stick out to me are, of course, some New York Islander guys I hated back when I was growing up as a Flyers fan, and that's it, Brian Trottier and Billy Smith. First of all, how'd you get Billy Smith? He seems like a guy who, and his persona on the ice, tough as nails, and he hated you. If you were playing against him, he hated you, and he wasn't afraid to tell you.
And in personal real life, he's the sweetest, nicest guy. You wouldn't believe it. I mean, he couldn't be nicer. Dennis Poppin came last year.
Yeah.
And they're all very, very close. So Dennis nominated him and called Billy and said, "You got to go to this. It's great." So Billy's like, "Yeah, I'd love to." So he's coming up from Florida. Trotz is in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, and, you know, one of the greatest players of all time, Ken. You know, just two important parts of that Islander team that won 4 consecutive Stanley Cups.
Yeah. I remember Billy Smith was, early on in his career, was splitting time with Glenn Chico Rush. And actually, Rush had been the number one goaltender for a while, but I think things changed in the 79-80 season where Billy Smith took over and 4 Stanley Cups later, and he's in, I think he's in the whole NHL Hall or Pro Hockey Hall of Fame. But he was I can remember, you know, and as I said, he was Ron Hextall before Ron Hextall. He would dropped his gloves, and I saw recently on YouTube, fighting Lanny McDonald with the Maple Leafs. I remember as a kid watching a game against the Flyers going after Bill Flett, and there was a bench clearing brawl in the 78-79 season at Uniondale, and Smith was going after one of the Flyers' tough guys, Bob Kelly, and he was a battler, but he was a money goaltender, especially those four straight Stanley Cups. That was just an amazing run, which the likes will probably never see again.
That's true. I don't think we'll see that again. Big presence from RPI this year, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
Joey Juneau, who had a nice NHL career. Graham Townsend, who went on to become one of the first minority players ever in the NHL. Might have been one of the top five. I think Willie O'Ree was the first from the Bruins. But Graham had a nice career, was with the Islanders a short time, the Bruins. Big guy, you know, had a great career at RPI. And then Matt Murley. Yep. Also had a real nice career at RPI.
Yep.
So RPI really got on board this year, really wants to be a part of this and stepped up and really supportive, and we're glad to have RPI on board. We have a couple girls women that are being inducted this year. One is a woman who grew up in Saratoga, Kathleen Knott, who went to Brown, was on the U.S. Women's Olympic team that won a silver medal, and just a wonderful, lives in Toronto now, but had a great USA Olympic career and a great career at Brown, too. So I'm real happy about her. Melissa Sheeran, I believe, played at SUNY Plattsburgh, also had a tremendous collegiate career. So we're really happy. You know, there's a lot of great women hockey players from upstate New York. Very happy about that. And a name that you'll remember, Ken, Jigs McDonald.
Yes, the great Jigs. Yes, he called three of the Islanders Stanley Cup championships and former broadcaster for the L.A. Kings. That's where he first broke in the NHL, and then the Atlanta Flames. And then when the Flames moved to Calgary, he joined the Islanders and was there for a long time. And I think he wrapped things up with the Florida Panthers. He filled in occasionally on some Islanders broadcasts during his retirement. And I chat with him once in a while on Facebook, and he seems to be doing well. Can't wait to, I haven't seen Jigs in a while, so it'd be great to see him. And I also, Rangers, another broadcaster, is it Don Maloney?
And Don Maloney,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just talked to him not long ago, and Mike Smith, who is one of our board members, was a former GM of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
And he's from Potsdam and had a great career in the front office of a couple NHL teams. He knows Don real well. So he made the call, and he was excited and thrilled. And it's nice to have the Rangers on board, too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's hockey history there, the Rangers, and, of course, the Islanders. It's incredible what has developed over the years, thanks to that rivalry between those two teams. Really got going in 1975 when the Islanders upset the Rangers in the best-of-three first-round series. J.P. Parisi scoring 11 seconds into overtime in Game 3 to basically end the Rangers' run, basically close their window any chance of Stanley Cups. I mean, they had some good teams that could never get over the hump. They got to the finals in 72 against the Bruins, but just could never get that Stanley Cup, and still had to wait another few years before they finally won in 94.
Right.
So, yeah, plus I would love to hear Dave or Don's take about what has happened to the Rangers this year, coming off the President's Trophy team last year for the best overall record, and they may not make the playoffs this year.
It's quite amazing their swift demise, because it doesn't look like they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah. I'm a Flyers fan. I haven't seen the playoffs in a while, so misery loves company. So,
real tough division, tight division. Yeah. All the teams are sort of tightly bunched. Yeah.
We're
real thrilled with the growth of all three Halls of Fame, especially hockey. You know, because you come every year. Hmm. Jim Lorenz is getting.
Yes, that's what I meant. Yeah, I mentioned him. Of course, he's most infamous. He did win a Stanley Cup with the Bruins in 1970, but I think his most his biggest claim to fame as a player was killing a bat in Game 3 of the 1975 Cup Finals against the Flyers when he was with the Sabres. And, of course, that game ended up being the Fog game and all that fun stuff. And we'd love to talk to Jimmy about what happened at that whole bat situation. Because he killed it, and the Flyers, Rick McLeish, picked it up and threw it out.
Wow. So last year we inducted Eddie Westfall, you know, who was a Bruins and Islanders player, real classy player, good guy. And the Bruins ownership, the Jacobs family, sent Jim Lorenz to come represent them at our dinner. And when I met him, I didn't even know he was coming. And he was such a gentleman, such a great guy. And before he left that night, we extended him the offer to be inducted this year.
Of course, he also had a great broadcasting career with the Sabres, working alongside Jenneret. Rick Jenneret. Thank you. The first name escaped me for a second there because, you know, we got to see Jim on Empire Sports Network, one of the first put on here in the mid-1990s, and, of course, went over to MSG Networks before he stepped down a couple of years ago. So he'll probably have some great stories about Rick as well.
Yeah, you know, there's a strong feeling of friendship, kinship in the room when we have that night. It's a good setting, and, you know, the hockey fraternity is pretty small, Ken.
Yeah.
They all know each other. They all like each other, and they might bang on the ice, but after the game is over, they have no problem having a beer with each other.
I know. That's one thing that has amazed me over the years in covering the sport, how – you know, these guys just basically beat each other up, and then you see them out maybe outside in the hallway of the locker rooms talking to each other and, exchanging pleasantries and all that stuff. It's just truly an amazing time, and that's why I love this sport so much and love covering college hockey. And I covered the HL for many years when I first broke into the business, and so it's a fun business to be in.
And you know, Ken, think of all the how strong the Northeast is, especially New York State, in collegiate hockey, both men and women. Clarkson, Colgate, Cornell, RPI, Union, U.S. Army, St. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great collegiate programs. And, you know, on a level with anybody in the country.
Yep, indeed. When is the hockey banquet?
Hockey is July 13th. Baseball is November 9th.
And let's talk about the baseball. Who do we have getting inducted so far?
Well, right now on our list is the New York Yankee general manager, Brian Cashman.
Mm-hmm.
Former catcher, George Posada. Former major league and in Cooperstown, Jim Catt.
Jim Catt, yeah, yeah.
Who lives in Vermont half a year in the summertime, was a World Series player, played in the part of four different decades, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
And he pitched for my Phillies for a couple of years.
Yes, he did. And then he did a little stint with the Yes Network as an announcer, and he was great.
Yep. Yeah, before
Frank
that.
Frank Catalanato is the manager for Hofstra, mm-hmm. head coach. He played with the Mets, the Rays, the Rangers, and the Blue Jays. We announced yesterday a gentleman named Joe Panic, who's from downstate. He played for the San Francisco Giants, won a World Series, was an All-Star and a Gold Glove winner, and also was a great college player at St. John's. So real happy to add Joe Panic to the list. We have two local high school coaches. Columbia High, Chris Diedrich, who's a New York State champion. I've been a coach and an instructor for many years. And also, three-time New York State champion, Scott Steltz from Chatham High School. So, two very successful longtime coaches. And we have a gentleman from Saratoga Springs who did his high school pitching at St. Peter's, which is now Spot Catholic. Went to Vietnam, was injured in the war, was highly decorated with a bronze star and a purple heart, came out of Vietnam, was signed by the Yankees and pitched in Double-A, ultimately hurt his arm, and they didn't have Tommy John surgery in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Real happy to induct Brian Cogan.
That's good. So it sounds like a good class. I mean, possibly some more before we get to November?
Yes. Yeah. There are two people who have invitations outstanding, just checking on availability for the schedule.
That's good. So sounds like a lot of fun coming up, starting this Sunday, and then, of course, in the summer with the hockey, and then the baseball in November. Sounds like a great time.
Yeah, this will be my 34th consecutive sold-out event.
Great. That's great, Randy. Yeah. You do a great job with it, and I appreciate the invite every year for the hockey. So, you know, looking forward to meeting a lot of these guys and talking to them. And I really want to talk to is Billy Smith. I just find him fascinating, just because the way he played. I keep bringing up they didn't have that many the goaltenders. Most of those in that era were not aggressive at all, but he was a guy ahead of his time.
Yes, he was. Better than not skate in front of his crease.
No. Oh, man. If he was playing today, I mean, he'd probably have like 200, 300 penalty minutes away. They skate in front of the crease these days.
I know. You know, and last year, I'm so glad you came, because Mike Ruzzioni was fabulous. And I'd wanted to meet him since 1980. I'm 69 now. I'd waited, 45 years, 44 years to meet Mike. And what a nice guy he was.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. I had a great time. Yeah, we were talking to guys. Like I said, I mean, Dennis Potvin couldn't have been nicer. I mean, he laughed when I said I hated him as a player when I was growing up. And, you know, I talked to Eddie Westfall about a lot of history with the Flyers and the Islanders and some of the memories from when I was a kid. And this is great to be able to talk to these guys, players that – As a teenager and all that stuff, you hated because they were playing against your team and trying to beat your team. But to be able to talk to these guys like this is just incredible. And they're very more than cooperative. The only thing I wish from last year is Sam Rosen had given me an exclusive that he's going to retire this year. I mean, I was hoping.
Right.
Because maybe 2-3 weeks after the Hall of the banquet was, he announced he's going to retire at the end of the year. It's like, Sam, you could have told me I could have an exclusive.
I'm not quite sure he knew it that night. That he was
probably not. No, probably not. But he must have been thinking about it.
He was wonderful too, and one of the best hockey announcers I've ever heard.
Yeah, I know, and I know Wednesday night on TNT, the Flyers Rangers game, they're reuniting Sam and John Davidson, the classic broadcast team for MSG for many, many years, and you probably get a few old babies from John coming one more time between those two. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's sort of an end of the era, and Sam's never been better than he's been this year. He's just been great.
Yeah, he's going out on top.
As much as I like Butch, I like Sam a little better.
Yeah, so. Well, Randy, I appreciate it. Go ahead.
I'm real happy to be able to keep these events here in the Capital District, because I've had so many offers to take this downstate. And I just feel comfortable. We've got so much support from the Capital District and from upstate New York. So I think we have a good home. I've been at the Hilton in Troy for many years now, 14 years, and they do a great job. And I'm real thrilled with how they treat the guests. So I'm real happy to keep it here. And I don't think I'm ever moving.
That's great. That's great. So, Rennie, appreciate a few minutes, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks so much. I'll see you soon. Thanks,
all right,
Ken.
Thanks, Randy. That's Rennie LaRue. I'll be back with Dave Starman. We'll preview the NCAA Hockey Frozen Four. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in New York. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by NISPA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Explore the benefits of subscribing to the Daily Gazette, like our convenient e-edition app, personalized newsletters, and unique reader rewards when you join. Start your membership today. Offers redeemable at www.dailygazette.com.
Hi, this is New York State Senator and former Union College men's basketball standout Jim Todisco. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. The Frozen Four gets going on Thursday in St. Louis at Enterprise Center. The semifinals feature Denver and Western Michigan at 5 o'clock and Penn State and Boston University at 8:30. And covering that for Westwood One, he'll be in the broadcast booth, is our good friend Dave Starman. It's been a while since we had you on. Dave, how are things going?
Everything is going great. Always nice to be there at the end when the college hockey season is over and headed off into summer with a nice national championship round.
Yeah. Unlike the college basketball tournaments where in the men's all four number one seeds made it, and in the women's three of the four number one seeds made it, only one number one seed got to St. Louis, and that was Western Michigan. Are you surprised by that, or is this, you know, par for the course for hockey?
Oh, I think it's absolutely par for the course. And I just think what gets lost in translation and maybe not explained well as the national tournament starts from a broadcast perspective is that the difference between fours and ones are really small. And I think when you get, same thing with basketball, like I think once you get into the Sweet 16, you're looking at matchups where the lowest seeded team that's in there is probably not much lower than the team that they're going to play. So I think when you look at Holy Cross beating Minnesota, yeah, humongous upset. I think when you look at a game that I call with Clay Matvick, the game between AIC and St. Cloud, yes, huge, huge upset. But I think that fours beating ones, like Penn State beating Maine, I mean, you could very easily go into that regional with the thought process of at the moment when they dropped the puck, Penn State was a better team than Maine was. So I don't really think that if four fours got there, I think it'd be stunning. But in years where two of the regionals, the four seed wins the regional, I don't think it's that surprising.
Yeah. I mean, let's start with the semifinal, the first semifinal, the teams you're very familiar with since you are the analyst on CBS Sports Network's coverage of the NCHC, Denver and Western Michigan. They played in the tournament championship game a couple weeks ago in St. Paul. Western Michigan won in double overtime. Denver's the defending national champion. So, I mean this could be an amazing game, another de facto NCHC championship. How do you see this game?
I see this game a lot like the others that they played, and I see each team playing to their identity, and there are a lot of similarities between the way each of them play. And you know, you take a look at Western Michigan, Western is a team that loves to just go north fast. And I know it's a cliche kind of thing, but it's when you watch them play game after game, shift after shift, and you know my hockey OCD, I have. And the one thing that you notice with them is they never regroup. They rarely go backwards. And when they have a 50-50 situation in the neutral zone as to if they're going to go east or west or put a puck in, they put pucks in. Like, their mantra is attack, attack, attack before your opponent has a chance to even remotely get set up to defend you. And it's the same thing with the way that they shoot pucks. When they get pucks in their sticks, most of their forwards are skilled enough to two-touch it where they're just going to receive it and deliver it. So they create a lot of offense just by speed of execution, and that's why they have been, well, one of the reasons why they've been so good. And for Denver, you know, Denver is a team that this year is probably a little bit more balanced four lines wise than they have been in recent years. Denver is a team that can get a little top heavy at times, but I think this year they're a little bit more balanced, and obviously they've got, you know, perhaps the most skilled player in the country in Zeke Bouyam, who can obviously turn a game around himself. But, you know, the way that Denver scores is through their possession, and they wait you out and they wait for you to make a coverage mistake, and that's when they pounce. So you're looking at two teams, little bit of a difference in philosophy, same methodology, and the bottom line is they can both manufacture and score goals when they need to.
Yeah. I mean, talk about the job David Carr has done at Denver. I mean, a couple of national championships. He's coaching USA World Juniors of championships. Is this guy ready for the NHL, or does he enjoy college that much that he doesn't want to maybe make the next step?
They just had another baby, so that's three, and he's got three youngsters at home. I joked with him the other day about it. I said, you've just gone from man-to-man to zone coverage, and you know, when you get into that scenario, sometimes the big professional jumps can be a little challenging, and I will tell you this. The situation that he's in at the University of Denver is a great one. It's a really good program with excellent facilities and a really good city. It's a beautiful campus. They're in a really nice area, and he doesn't live far from campus. I mean, he's told me there are days where he just either walks or jumps on his bike and goes over to campus. So I think that his rush to the NHL is not necessarily there, and the other question becomes, what's left to prove at the NCAA level? I mean, there are coaches that have been at the NCAA level that have just continued to win championships. You look at like Nick Saban at Alabama, right? He just stayed there and he kept winning. You look at Gino Auriemma at UConn. He stayed there and he kept winning. I mean, sometimes there's a nice concept in the comfort level of knowing you're in a really good place. You're getting very well taken care of. You understand the dynamic that you're in. You understand the recruiting component, the media component, the expectation component, the community component, where you place in it. And I think that he's really comfortable there. So is he ready for the NHL? Probably. Do I sense that he's ready to jump tomorrow? No. And do I think this nonsense of the team that wins the Denver Western game becomes the coach of the Flyers is a little far-fetched?
Yeah, well, as I told you all before we started talking, my Flyers have just been stick up the joint lately. I mean, they. But here's the thing, though. You mentioned that they did hire Dave Hextall when Ron Hextall was general manager. That really didn't work out well. Of course, then Dave went to Seattle and didn't work out there as well. I mean, there is this, maybe this stigma that, you know, college coaches can't adjust, but there are. Look at what Jim Montgomery's been doing, first at Boston, now in St. Louis. I mean, he made the adjustment very well. So is there a stigma with that, that maybe college coaches can't make that jump?
Hey, listen, a lot of European coaches and a lot of Canadian Hockey League coaches came in and crapped out too. So I think that, you know, that's got to be mentioned in the same vein. Coaching the National Hockey League is hard, and you need a lot of things to go your way. First of all, you need a general manager that's going to give you a really good team. You need to make sure you get buy-in from your players. A lot of things have to go right. Teams have to stay healthy. What you inherited versus what you want to bring in, it's not like the transfer portal where everybody's a free agent. Like, you know, having done 11 years of NCAA free agency in the NHL as a scout, it's hard to rebuild because trades are really tough because of the economics, and the free agency is much more difficult at the NHL level with players becoming unrestricted, and, you know, and then signing the college guys. If you're signing a college free agent, most college free agents aren't going to be the high impact guy that pushes you over the top, right? So you've got some unique challenges when you take over as a head coach at the National Hockey League level. And I mean, Jim Montgomery's done a great job. It's hard to say Dave Hextall didn't work out because he did have some modicum of success in the two places that he was in, and the team that he was with in Toronto as an assistant was pretty good. So I just think there's a number of factors that go into it, and I don't think that there should be any stigma on bringing in an NCAA guy versus a Canadian Hockey League guy. I don't think that really matters. I tend to think that the coaches that are probably most ready-made for the NHL are probably coming out of the American League as head coaches, because it's a very similar situation. You're working more of a pro style. You're working more within the hierarchy. You're building relationship and trust with your GM and seeing how the inner workings go. So I don't think hiring a college guy is any more risk than hiring a guy at a major A or anywhere else. Yeah.
Talk about the job Pat Firschweiler, the head coach of Western Michigan, has done getting them to their first Frozen Four.
This might be as much fun as I've had watching an ascension to greatness in the 22 years that I have done this. And what Pat has done, first of all, he encourages fun, which is kind of nice. And he's like, guys, if we're not coming to the rink and we're not having fun, like, what are we doing here? Like, that's his number one thing. And then the other part of it is he's just created this culture of, do you want to be a Bronco? When Andy Murray was there, Andy Murray recruited guys that wanted to be pros. And it worked because he wanted that kind of motivation in his players. And when Firschweiler took over, the mantra became, we want guys that are going to be Western Michigan Broncos and succeed here. We don't necessarily look for the highest end player, because that highest end player may not fit into what we are in Kalamazoo and the rink we play in at Lawson Arena and the community that we're in. So he had a very specific mindset on what he wanted to recruit. He wanted fast. He wanted grit. He wanted snarl. He wanted selflessness, and he got a lot of it. And the other thing that he really, really made a priority was speed, but smart speed. And when you look at his defense corps, he's got six guys that can really wheel. I mean, they may not be all Brian Leeches, but they can all fly. They can all handle pucks. They can all defend with their feet. They can all defend with possession. And the thing that he sold a lot of the forwards on, and think about how many elite forwards he's had come through there, the thing that he sold them on was the harder we defend and the more we're going north, and the more we have the pucks on our sticks, the more fun we're going to have. And that's really almost the simplistic version of why they have been so successful and why those guys love playing there.
Yeah, talk about some of the players like Alex Bump. I think he's a Flyers prospect, isn't he?
He is, and we did an in-game thing during the NCHC championship game on CBS Sports Network. I went back and I watched all the goals that he scored, and the one thing that really struck me was, as a right shot, he scores the majority of his goals from the left wing side, and he does it by scoring on the far side of the net. And the reason I mentioned that as a feat is because great scorers know how to use the eyes of the puck. And if you're on the left wing side of the ice, and you're a left-handed shot, what does the puck see? The puck generally sees the short side. Your eyes may see something else, but the puck sees the short side. He's got this amazing ability to put the puck across goalies, and he does it by shifting his elbows in stride, in shot, to change the angle of how he's shooting so they can put it to the far side of the net, because he catches goalies cheating to try to stop him short side. And that has become really the key to his goal scoring, and he has just been unbelievable this season.
Yeah. How do you see Denver has that experience, obviously winning the national championship last year, and this is Western Michigan's first to go at it. I mean, does experience win out in that first semifinal game?
Maybe a little bit, but I think two things play into Western's hands in this game that might help them. One is it's the early game, and the early games tend to not be as packed as the late game. It's usually 75% versus 100% full at times, and early on in the game, it tends to be a little quieter. So Western is one of those teams that might be able to take advantage of the sleepy atmosphere to start with. The other thing is, Western's playing a lot of big games. They've been in the national tournament for four straight years now, and they've played in regional finals. They've played in NCHC championship games. I mean, they've played in some big games. Now, have they played a game as big as this one? No. But the one thing that's unique about this game, and sometimes it happens when you get into the first game of a two-set in these big tournaments, the heavy favorite is expected to win. There's no heavy favorite in this game. I mean, this game is a pick 'em at best. And for both teams, the familiarity probably helps them.
Yeah. The other semifinals we mentioned, Penn State and Boston University. Penn State making its first appearance in the Frozen Four. Guy Gadowski has been there since the program started. Just the job he has done. I mean, this team was, like, I think, 0-9 in Big Ten play to start. And then they came on in the second half of the year, and just amazing job. You know, obviously, quote-unquote home ice advantage in Allentown. In the regional, beating Maine, and then winning in overtime against UConn. Just the job Guy Gadowski has done to make Penn State a relevant hockey program in the national scene.
Well, the thing about Gadowski, he grew up outside of Edmonton when the Oilers were winning Stanley Cups. And he and I have talked about this at length on numerous occasions because we're pretty close. And, you know, he said, Dave, I grew up watching offense. Like, I'm okay winning 9-8. I want to score goals. I want games to be exciting. And I don't care if we give up 8 if we score 9. And he really means it. And some of his teams have been that way. He's had teams that have been better defensively at times. But, you know, he wants up-tempo. He wants offense. He wants to go score. And he wants to have some fun behind the bench watching it. And I think a lot of his teams have been built in that mode. And this year, they did get off to that awful start. And sometimes it's a great line, and I cannot remember what movie I heard it in, but there's a line about sometimes when you hit rock bottom, it's probably the greatest thing ever because you can't get any lower, and the only place you can go is up. And that team had that aha moment where they realized that they had hit rock bottom and anything that they do now is going to be better than anything that they've done. And they just kind of went and ran with it. And they've got a couple of great scorers that have been just filling the net like crazy. Fink's been unbelievable. DeMarisco's been unbelievable. They're getting the goaltending. Their defense core can really jump. But the thing that has impressed me about them is their belief in what they're doing. And I don't necessarily buy into they got a break by playing in Allentown, because you still have to go win the games, right? Yeah. You're still playing two teams that are allegedly better than you are in the rankings. But my feeling is the team you got to watch out for when you get to these situations is the team that's the hottest. And right now that's them. And that's why they are really interesting coming into this thing.
I know Patrick Waugh gets a lot of credit for being the first coach to, you know, pull your goaltender like 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, trying to do something. I think Guy Gadowski did it before him, because it was a Union game that I covered at Messer Rink, like late 2000, like 2007, 2008. Princeton was down 4-0 in the third period. He pulls his goaltender about 6-7 minutes left. They score. He pulls it again. They score. He pulls it again. They score. They almost tied the game up with that. So, I mean, he's a coach that's not afraid to make those kind of moves.
Well, he probably had 9 engineers on the bench that were computing the mathematics of when to pull the goalie. I mean, that's probably a competitive advantage coaching Princeton. Yeah. But the thing about Gads, and the reason I love him, is he's always learning, he's always experimenting, and he's always tinkering. It's a unique component about him. He's a curious guy, and he's one of those real students of the game. And as some of his former colleagues in Alaska have said to him, he's kind of like the cool nerd. You know, like he's a great dude, but he's also the guy that will carry the books around all the time and break them out and try to study where he can. But think about this when it comes to Gadowski, and this I think is kind of neat. He got Alaska, which might be one of the hardest places to recruit to. He got Alaska Fairbanks within a game of the national tournament when he was coaching them in a CCHA. He got Princeton, which might be the other hardest school to recruit to for the other reason. He got Princeton into the national tournament, and then they took an expansion program, and he's built a success. So if anybody ever doubted Guy Gadowski as a head coach and his ability to build a program, this to me is the hat trick of proving them wrong. Yeah.
Meanwhile, a guy who's really done a great job at BU at his alma mater, Jay Pandolfo, a third straight trip to the Frozen Four. Another guy who's being mentioned as possible NHL material. Jay's got that program back to where those fans expected. I mean, how good is that for BU?
I think it's important when the Blue Bloods are good, because the Blue Bloods move the meter. And, you know, we've often talked in sports about how everybody loves an upset. People may love upsets, but they don't, or people may love the underdogs. They don't necessarily watch them. So it's really important that the schools that have been traditionally really good and are the brand names in the minds of the hockey fans that are watching, it's really important that they're good. And that's why schools like Michigan State and BU making their reascension to where they belong has been, I think, really important for viewership and interest in college hockey. And, you know, Pandolfo's really unique. Like, this is the 7th opportunity he's had to get to a Frozen Four as a player or coach. And, you know, he's 7 for 7, which I think is one of the cooler things that I've ever seen. And, you know, it's interesting. I remember when Jack Parker was coaching BU, I had lots of conversations with him about how hard it is to coach at BU for various reasons. David Quinn was really vocal in how hard it was to coach at BU. And one of the problems is with the influx of high-end guys that you know are not staying for 4 years, how the hell do you build consistency when you're in that mess? Now you got NIL stuff going on and portal and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think coaching at BU is a thankless job, and as it is with some of the other bigger name schools that are dealing with this. And he's had the ability to reload when he's had to. He's lost the players that he has. But the bottom line is he's built a program that has played consistently well, whether it be in net, whether it be offensively, whether it be depth, whether it be the role players that he needs. Like, he's just done a pretty good job of putting a roster together. And I think a lot of that is the pro experience that he brought to the job.
Yeah. How do you see that semifinal? I mean, what's going to be the key to that one?
I will tell you, not having seen Penn State and BU play as much as I've seen Western and Denver, mm-hmm. I don't have the same feel for the game. But in picking the brains of people who have seen those two teams you know, ad nauseum. The vibe I'm getting is that Penn State might be a little bit more thorough as a team, where BU may have the better players, Penn State may be the better team. And the one thing that I have said for the last 3 years going into Frozen Fours is generally the best team wins this thing, right? And there's that old saying, and Red Gendron, may he rest in peace, I loved him. Red Gendron always used to say, Dave, the reality is the team that gets off the bus with the best players generally wins. But in the Frozen Four, what I've noticed is the team that is the best team and playing as the best team getting into the tournament generally gets through the Frozen Four. And the 2 years that Denver won, I said it right before the games, like Denver's been the best team coming into this, and that's where they're going to win this thing. And I really felt that same way with Quinnipiac. And I think the best team in that game is Penn State.
Yeah. And there's a lot of talk, Dave, about the regional setup and people maybe wanting to go back to doing it on campus. What's your view of the regionals?
What's my view of the regionals? I'll tell you what, I get the sense that they're not working. Like that's the vibe I'm getting from an attendance standpoint and from some of the buzz just in reading the clippings. Like I haven't watched a regional in 3 years just because I've been off those weekends and been busy elsewhere, which is unfortunate. But the feeling that I get is that they would love to see these things back on campus. I always have, and here's the reason why. I think the college hockey fan wants to be in a college hockey building. And I think when you look at tournaments that have gotten played at neutral sites, not just regionals, but in-season tournaments and all those kinds of unique things that are going on, I don't necessarily see the college hockey fan, with the exception of the Beanpot, flocking to an NHL building to watch college hockey. I think they like being in their environment. So if you can get into number one seeds hosting, that would be great. But I do think you run into some issues there too. And it's funny, I wrote a story about this for USCHO, I feel like eons ago. But one of the issues was, can certain number one seeds host? Like if you're, let's say you're Ferris State, mm-hmm. and you are a one seed. There's no way Ferris State can host. The building's just not built for it. So that becomes a problem. If you're North Dakota and you're a number one seed, you can host your regional and somebody else's. I mean, that's how much room that they have there. So does the question become, does every team put in their game plan for if they're a one seed, can they host? And then the NCAA Men's Division I committee's got to take a look at all this and say, okay, yes, you know what, Ferris, you can't, you're not really built for it, but where can we go that's really close? Or North Dakota, yes, you can host. If you're a one seed, you got it. So that's part one. But part two becomes the logistics, and that is, let's say all of a sudden Grand Forks is hosting a regional. You can have enough hotel space in the proximity to the arena where they can comfortably host regarding hotels, regarding fans coming in, people being close, rental cars, all that kind of stuff. Like you get that part two of it also. So I don't think there's a perfect answer, but I do think that there needs to be a more concerted effort for regionals and potentially even the Frozen Four at times to be played on campus sites.
I mean, Mike McMahon of College Hockey News and College Hockey Center has suggested that maybe the regional start time should not be, there shouldn't be 2 o'clock games, just put them in prime time. I mean, obviously ESPN has all the platforms, they can show games on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, but they don't want to. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm going to say it, it's probably going to get me in trouble, but like, I don't get the sense that they want to.
Yeah.
So like, here's my feeling is, look at what CBS Sports did with the NCAA men's basketball tournament. It's on three networks. There's a combination and a partnership between two separate entities to use all of their platforms, which whether it be over the air or cable and mainstream cable and not a tiered cable, to be able to get those games. So when the NCAA men's basketball tournament is on, every one of those games is available on our network that you can find. And I think that's important. And that's not a knock on ESPN. It's just they have other programming that's more valuable to them. And if you're the programming guy, like how do you justify knocking a bigger event off to put on a regional between two teams that nobody's ever heard of, which you know the eyeballs are not going to be there for versus your other program.
Yeah.
So I it's not it's not like their fault. They're just dealing with an issue that is very complex. And one of the things I have felt is if you are some other national entities that are all working within the NCAA's umbrella, it might just be time to start divvying this up to different entities that can go national and put your game on, not only in the two markets that are there, but put it on as a national broadcast in a time slot where maximum eyeballs are seeing the best 16 games that you could put on the air.
Yeah. So who will you be working with on Westwood One this weekend?
Honored to be working once again with Brian Tripp, who's the play-by-play guy for Penn State. Yes. I cannot wait for the Penn State BU game because I almost want to just sit there and listen to Brian call the game. He's going to be excited. He's going to have passion for it. He got close once before when Penn State lost to Michigan in a regional final. I cannot wait to watch my friend Brian Tripp be that excited about his team do or play in the national championship or play in the Frozen Four and him having a chance to call the game on Westwood One, which is national radio. That's going to be phenomenal. That's going to be worth the price of admission by itself. And as I said to him, Brian, I said, that game's yours. I said, I'm only going to speak when you tell me to. I'm not saying a word unless I have to. And he's great. And Shireen Saski, as always, will be doing ringside. And her and I are trying to figure out, as a married couple, how many games we've done. We figure we are got to be close to 130, just looking at the CBS schedule and Frozen Fours. But I love working with her. She is, as I like to say to people, the last of a dying breed when it comes to being able to do a one-on-one interview and ask a follow-up question because she listens to the answers, mm-hmm. being able to storytell, and really being able to get into the nitty-gritty of what matters to the teams and the people that are listening to the stories. I just think she does a great job introducing people who don't know the teams that are involved in our games to who these kids are, who these programs are, and what matters.
My question for Brian is, how is he going to play it down the middle?
Well, he's not, and that's the beauty of it. Like we're kind of okay with that. You know, like I said to him, hey, listen, if Penn State winds up in the national title game, and obviously they're going to be playing a Nacho team, which you know, I know so well. They're all, those teams are like family to me. I said, we got a unique dynamic up there. Yeah. But here's the bottom line. Like, you do Penn State hockey. You should be excited about what goes on there. I know you're a pro. I know you're going to do this right down the middle. But I'm just, it's fun to watch a scenario like this where you're with the team for 12 years, and now you are going to be on national radio broadcasting potentially their two biggest games in program history. I just think it's so cool, and that's why I can't wait to get to St. Louis. And I think Brian's walking there. I think he left yesterday.
Well, Dave, as always, I always enjoy talking hockey with you, and let's do it again next season.
Sounds great. See you, Shotzi. Right, thanks for everything.
That's Dave Starman. I'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest in just a moment.
Are you an enthusiastic sports fan? Want to have fun and get in on the action?
Heck yes, that'd be awesome.
Have great attention to detail? Want to stay active?
Definitely.
Want to give back to the student athletes in your community?
Obviously, yes.
Then you'd make an excellent high school sports official. We need more officials in New York, because with no high school officials, there are no high school sports. Sign up today at highschoolofficials.com.
Hi, I'm Stan.
And I'm Shen.
And each week we bring you the Stan and Shen Show. And each week we talk about fun things through our travels throughout the Capital Region. We touch on food, we touch on news, try to touch heavily on good news. And Shen's always available with hot takes.
Yeah, so if you could follow along and listen to us every week on dailygazette.com or on all major streaming platforms, we'd love to have you join us.
Hi, this is Union College men's hockey head coach Josh Hoji. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 8 winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest was Michael Walker of Rotterdam with an impressive 80 points. Michael wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Michael. The VIP winner was me. I had 30 points. I'll announce the auto racing contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the auto racing contest banner.
Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. And a reminder, vaccines do not cause autism. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss a headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. On the latest edition of the Stan and Shen Show, they will have Thursday's Belmont on Broadway announcement. The Stan and Shen Show is available wherever you get your podcast. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Rennie LaRue and Dave Starman for being on the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X, Threads, and Blue Sky at Slapshots. The views expressed in the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.